What up, everybody, and welcome. This is the Dr. Football Ultimate Patriots Podcast. How y'all doing tonight? Welcome. We have another awesome episode planned for you. A lot to get into. Joining me, as always, is the CEO of Hedgebetter, Justin Fine. We got an 11-game winning streak ripped apart. We've got things going crazy all across the NFL. We're going to get into all of it. But first, as always, we're going to start in Foxborough. Justin, how are you doing tonight, by the way, my man? You doing good?
Yeah, I'm doing good. You know, a little disappointed from the weekend, but I think we all are, right?
Yeah. It had to end eventually.
It did.
They weren't going to win every game.
No. It's disappointing. But you know what? Look, it's disappointing when you blow a 21-0 lead, right? That's always, it's always tough.
Yeah, it was. And it was, I mean, I was there, obviously. It was terrific atmosphere. It was a fun game, an entertaining game. And, you know, there was just so many opportunities for them to put this thing away. Mm. And it was just one of those games where, like, there was probably like 15 things you could point to where if any one of those things happened differently,
right,
then they probably still win this game. But it's just like everything just fell apart in the second half. So we're going to break all of it down. We're going to get into this game. Who's at fault? Who's responsible? What the future of this franchise is. But what I want to kick it off with, Justin, is what I think is the main headline from Sunday. To me, the big story from Sunday. And that is that I am growing increasingly concerned with the way Drake May is performing in crunch time in the second half and in the fourth quarter of games. And look, I know how bad the defense was on Sunday. I get it. That was pathetic. But they had ample opportunities on offense in the second half to put something together, to put this game away, and they couldn't do it. Drake May, right now, in his career, his young career, is 1-7 in games in which his team is trailing by 7 points or less in the fourth quarter. He's something like 1-13 when his team is trailing in the second half. There is a such thing as like a clutch gene. There is like a such thing as clutch DNA, I believe. I just watched it with Tom Brady. Right. I watched it a little with Drew Bledsoe. Even he had some of that. And I am concerned with the way Drake May is playing in the second. Second half of these games, I thought on Sunday it came up big. I thought Drake May came up really small, and I thought there were opportunities, not the least of which was getting the ball back with 2 minutes and 46 seconds left, three timeouts, and not even being able to get a first down. So I'm getting worried about the way Drake May is not coming through in clutch situations. What say you?
Yeah, I mean, look, obviously that was a tough look the other night, right? I don't want to put all the blame on Drake, though. I know you, as you mentioned, the defense, and I know we talked about that clutch factor. But, you know, two things I want to point out is, first off, I don't think he got much help from his skill players, right? I know Travion Henderson looked okay. But, you know, guys like Stephon Diggs and Kayshon Boutte, they were really nowhere to be found, right? Hunter Henry dropped a ball right through his hands in a crucial drive in the second half. And again, something that I think was an issue that we've been talking about all season is the play calling. Like, this team, for one reason or another, takes their foot off the gas in the second half. And I know we've complained about this to each other, but I thought the same thing, you know, again this week. I looked at what happened. You know, the Bills get the ball, they come out and score, and the Patriots kick off their opening drive with what to me were two conservative give up plays right up the middle that ultimately stalled that drive out. And after that, the momentum had just totally flipped back in Buffalo's direction. So, you know, I don't
think that was when it was 24-14.
When it was 24-10. Yes. No. Yeah, 24-14.
Yeah. And they got the ball back.
Yes.
And then 20, they ran
exactly,
it twice,
exactly.
And put themselves in third and long. And,
yes.
And I think May took a sack.
Yes, exactly. And after that point, I'm sure you could feel it in the stadium, sitting at home watching it. You could feel the momentum in that game flip after that sequence to start the second half, right? Buffalo scores, you come out and lay an egg. So I really don't think that they did too much to help Drake. I'm not saying he played his best game in the second half. I'm not saying he still doesn't have to prove that he's a clutch, big game, big time player when it's all on the line. But I don't think his playmakers helped him out. I don't think his play callers helped him out. And his defense certainly didn't help him out.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. There's no question about everything you said being true. The play calling was, I thought, really poor, especially in the third quarter. The receivers were a huge problem. And if you being at the game, you can see things a little more than on television. No one was open. No one was open. Like, these guys were not open. So I understand and agree completely with what you're saying. But I thought this franchise had so much at stake on Sunday. And I'm going to tell you why, because we know what Drake May's floor is. We know Drake May belongs in the NFL. We know he's at worst the 12th or 15th best quarterback in the NFL. But I think the real question we have is he Jared Goff? Is he Dak Prescott? Is he an above average to good guy, or is he really a great guy? And you saw Josh Allen, with hardly a perfect situation around him, elevate his team, make plays, in the face of adversity. That's what an MVP caliber quarterback does. And when I say that I'm disappointed in May, it's because I didn't see MVP caliber, elite caliber play from him on Sunday. And that's what I'm hoping he is.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Look, I mean, I was very optimistic. I thought Drake was kind of setting himself up for a big game, right? The two rushing touchdowns on essentially the first two possessions of the game, right? I'm thinking to myself, all right, Drake May comes out and throws one or two passing touchdowns here, four total touchdowns, two in the ground, two in the air, like beat the Bills. Like, that's MVP caliber numbers. That's an MVP caliber performance. Agreed. Right. And after that, everything just totally, totally dried up for him. And it was very disappointing after that start, to see the finish. And I agree, especially that last drive of the game. It just didn't seem like, he had it going. I right before that, right before the fourth down play, I'm not sure if it was second or third down, but watching the replay, he had a couple guys wide open and he just didn't pull the trigger quick enough. He held on to it a little too long. Like, it just, it's tough like that. Like you said, that, big players will rise to the occasion and make, Josh Allen, by the same token, I think he got a little annoyed of hearing about how it was the Patriots' time to rise up in the AFC.
You don't think that the crowd chanting MVP in the first half, kind of rubbed Josh Allen and that whole Buffalo Bills team the wrong way? Like, and Justin, there was a point in the first half of this game where I'm like, Drake May is winning the MVP. That's how big things swung in that second half on Sunday, but. You don't think that whole thing kind of pissed off Josh Allen, and he went out in the second half and he showed us, he showed May, he showed the Patriots, he showed the fans what an MVP really is.
Yeah. He was unstoppable in that second half. He really was, like, literally unstoppable. Right. He reminded everybody the difference that still exists between him and a Drake May, right? Like, he has the ability to go out and not only put that entire team on his back, but he was a force to be reckoned with. It was something that we still haven't seen Drake May do. Drake May's looked really good at times this year. Yeah. He's never looked unstoppable. And Josh Allen looked unstoppable in that second half.
I don't think we've still yet seen Drake May put his team on his back and just single-handedly will his team to victory like Josh Allen did on Sunday.
No, we haven't. The Bills defense played pretty good. I think overall the Bills figured it out in the second half, but the way Josh Allen was clear-cut the reason that they did what they did on Sunday. I mean, I can't even point to the next most valuable guy in that roster on Sunday. It was all Josh Allen.
It really was. I mean, that was impressive. That really made me, I think it really emphasized that as much as May has looked great this year, he is not really at that MVP level yet. And I think Josh Allen just put that out there on a pedestal to show the world, this is what MVP quarterback plays. It's not just good or very good or even great quarterback play. It's a different level. And Allen was hit that level. And frankly, May had those opportunities on Sunday and he did it. You know, everything you said is right. I mean, there's a lot that you can pick apart from the Patriots on this game that have nothing to do with Drake May. And that's probably my second take home from this game on Sunday is that, look, I'm not closing this team off. I still think there anything can happen because this conference is wide open. I fear no one in this AFC, but I think any one of these teams could either beat the Patriots or could get beaten by the Patriots. And that goes from Houston to Denver, 1-7 right now in the AFC. Yeah. So anything can happen. But I mean, I watched this game on Sunday and I'm like, look, this team is still probably a year away from being a true Super Bowl contender in the traditional sense.
Right.
And the thing that really jumped out at me, and you just hit on this, and I want to hear what you think about it, is that they really still lack a number one wide receiver. And Steph Diggs, good player. He's not that guy anymore. And when in May's defense, no, and I said this already, nobody was open. These guys were covered. And Buffalo, they had the Patriots figured out, and there was no answer.
Yeah, I agree. But, you know, to play my own devil's advocate, and I'll get to the Patriots not having a number one receiver, but the Bills don't have a number one receiver either, right? And that just makes what Josh Allen did that much more impressive because he went out and he dominated that game using arguably a very comparable plethora of skill positions that Drake May has, right? I would argue that the Patriots wide receiving core maybe even be better than what Josh Allen has at wide receiver,
yeah,
right?
That's
so
fair.
You know, I'd take Hunter Henry over Dawson Knox and Donkey, like Josh Allen's arguably working with less. And so, you know, you can't attribute it all to not having a number one receiver, but I will say like the receivers didn't do anything to help him. I mean, Mac Hollins was your best looking guy on Sunday. And that really can't be the case, right? Cause he's really like your third or fourth receiver. Stephon Diggs, Kayshon Booty. I mean, they disappeared.
Did Pop Douglas even dress?
Douglas did absolutely nothing.
Yeah,
Hunter Henry really did nothing. You know who, and I'll eat my words, you know who did look good were the two backs, including Ramondre Stevenson.
Yeah.
Ramondre Stevenson looked looked pretty good. Travion Henderson looked pretty good. But you know what? That's not enough. You can't be one-dimensional in beat the Bills. They needed to get their air attack going, and they just never found it. They never did.
Yeah, I just felt like, you know, where Drake May is right now and what the lack of a go-to guy I thought was huge in this game. And I just thought it really hurt the Patriots. Like I think Buffalo kind of figured out what the Pats were doing, and the Pats didn't have that like one guy that they could really go to answer and kind of overcome it. A lot of people, Justin, have wondered if there is a blueprint for Drake May. And one of the discussion things people were talking about going into this game is Drake May so good that he's blueprint proof? And I think that we've been saying for a long time, for people that have been listening to this podcast, I think the blueprint on Drake May has been out since the Tampa Bay game. But I thought Buffalo did a lot of the same things that the Jets did, that the Giants did, and that Tampa Bay did, which is sit back in coverage.
Yeah.
Don't blitz him because he's great against the blitz. To his credit, that's one of his strengths. He will eat the blitz up. He can throw the ball deep better than anyone else. Keep your two safeties back so he doesn't beat you deep. And the Patriots don't have the skill position talent, I think, to really make you pay in his own defense.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's exactly what they did. I mean, Drake May, you know, he really wasn't under too much pressure the entire
day. He was
day,
not.
Right? Like the O-line held up pretty well. He had
Darian
time in
Lowe
the pocket.
Played a good game.
Yeah, yeah. I can't complain about how much time he had or you know, being under pressure. So it really did just come down to the fact that A, the Bills covered the Patriots receivers well, and B, the Patriots receivers didn't do a good enough job of getting open in making plays. So, you know, because again, between Drake May, Ramondre, and Travion, the three of them had pretty good games on the ground.
Yeah,
you know,
a lot of those sacks were really coverage sacks that May took in the second half of that game. Where it was like, I'm telling you, I was in the stadium. There was no one really open on most of those plays.
Yes, no, and I agree. So, you know, it's tough. It's tough not seeing him out there with the real, you know, 1A like cream of the crop receiver out there. But you know, he didn't, they didn't need it in the first game. Diggs played like, you know, you think back to that first Bills game, you know, Stephon Diggs stepped up. I think Stephon Diggs is way better, in a way better position now than he was then. I think the whole receiving core in general is better now, in a better position now than they were then. So I don't know how much of it was scheme and how much of it was just those guys not doing what needed to be done. But it was the combination of those two things really, really bit the Patriots in the butt on Sunday.
It is the, as Dr. Justin, can I pronounce the MVP campaign for Drake May officially dead? Can we declare it dead today after Sunday? I think we can.
I think it has to be, especially Matt Stafford went out and played a great game on Sunday too. Like I think, you know what? I think Drake May gave it a great bid. I think he even realistically had multiple opportunities to win the MVP this season. And I think even just the fact that we're talking about him as, you know, being in the top three is something worth noting and worth speaking of. But yeah, I think at this point it would probably take a miracle for him.
I think it's beyond that. Like unless like Stafford and Allen somehow both get hurt and he finishes the year really great, I think it's totally dead. And that's totally okay, by the way, because I don't think May had an MVP caliber year. Yeah. And I'm just being honest. I mean, I think he's had a great year. Maybe he's had a top five year. But I really, truly don't think you could look at this year and say that's MVP caliber quarterback play. It just isn't. You know, you can't go the whole season without a 300-yard game or a 4-touchdown game and tell me that quarterback is the MVP.
I agree completely. Yeah, he had a very good season, but at the end of the day, I just don't think he did enough to get himself over the hump. Especially
and some of that might come back to some of the limitations on this roster too. I'm not saying that, but at some point, you've got to put up those numbers. I mean, we're talking about the MVP. We're not talking about just like good, you know?
Yeah, totally agree.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about the defense of this team, Justin. And I'll tell you what I was thinking of when I was watching the second half of this game. First of all, this was awful. It was awful defense. What, I mean, this was like, I mean, 10, 12 play drive, 9 play drive. This was not fluky big plays. This was a systemic dismantling of this defense by the Buffalo Bills. And I'm sitting in my seat in section 111 at Gillette Stadium, and I'm thinking of the boogeyman. And I'm like, is this another boogeyman situation? And the conclusion I come to is actually, no, it's not. And I'm going to tell you why. Because they were missing their best player. Milton Williams changes his defense. And I don't think this is a boogeyman situation, but I think what you saw on Sunday is how valuable Williams is to this defense, because if Milton Williams plays, this is a totally different game.
Completely different game. And correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think Spillane played either.
He did not. And that was another big loss.
Yes. Yeah, so you know what? And here was arguably my biggest problem with the defense is you're missing your best pass rusher and your two best run stoppers, right? Because that's the Robert Spillane specialty, right? He's a downhill linebacker. He's been huge at stopping the run and in helping bust up the line of scrimmage. So you're missing Milton Williams and Robert Spillane, which is obviously impacting your ability to stop the run and get pressure on the quarterback. What I didn't understand is the amount of times that I watched this defense rush for and give Josh Allen all the time in the world to sit back and pick them apart. If there was ever a situation where you wanted to increase your blitz rate and put pressure on a quarterback, it was on Sunday. Because look, we just said the Bills don't have a bona fide number one wide receiver, okay? They don't have great skill players. So you're telling me that with some of the talent you have in the secondary, you know, you brought in a big, big money cornerback, you got Christian Gonzalez, you know, you're telling me that you couldn't bring the pressure on Josh Allen in blitz a little bit more and try to get him uncomfortable? Josh Allen picked us apart because he had all the time in the world back there. And I remember specifically, and I texted you after this, but I said it to the people I was watching the game with at the time, when it was third and goal from like the 14 yard line.
And that was where the Patriots lost.
That was where the Patriots lost
on that play.
100%. And I said beforehand, I said, you got to bring the house here. You got to put pressure on him. You can't let him just sit back. And what did they do? They they rushed four, no pressure, and he sat back, he picked you apart, and then it was just a waiting game for a guy to run around and get open. And I said
to the guy next to me at Gillette, I said, this is a 3rd and 15. This is one of the, from the 15-yard line, this is one of the lowest probability plays in all of football. Yeah. And I'm like 90% confident that Josh Allen's going to convert this because that was just the way this defense was so on its heels at this point. And I couldn't agree with you more. They sat back in coverage. I think Allen had almost 4.5 seconds back there, scrambling around 5 seconds before he was able to find an open guy. And it was just very, very, I thought, bad play calling, bad defense. I'll tell you what I was struck by too is, I mean, like, we're talking so much about Josh Allen, and I'll take a victory lap on this. I told you last week that, like, we do not want to get, the Patriots do not want to be in a situation where they have to rely on this run defense to get back in this game. And I knew they were going to have trouble stopping this Buffalo run game, but as much as Allen was unbelievable, I felt like what really drove this comeback was the inability of the Patriots to stop the running game. Every time Buffalo ran the ball, they were getting 5 to 12 yards in the second half.
100%. The Bills constantly found themselves in 2nd and 4, 2nd and 3, 2nd and 5, because they were running the ball at a pretty high clip on first down, and they were just gashing the Patriots for 5-6 yards at a time. And at that point, you're going to give a team like the Bills three tries to get a couple yards. Like, it's not going to work out well for you. So yeah, the rush defense really, really disappointed. We knew it was going to struggle, right? They've been struggling the last few weeks without Milton Williams. Add in the fact that they don't have Robert Spillane in this game, and you're going up against what's arguably the best tandem between quarterback and running back rushing in the league. And it was obviously going to be an uphill battle. So, that's, again, we're bringing some extra guys and stacking the box and bringing some pressure could have helped a little bit.
It's almost like shame on Sean McDermott for not coming into the game and figuring that out. But once Buffalo figured out that they could pretty much run the ball at will on this Patriots defense, I mean, it was over. I mean, it was like the Patriots were powerless to stop, and the tackling was horrible. But I feel like a lot of that comes down to at the line of scrimmage when James Cook is able to kind of run into the line with like a full head of steam and nothing slowing him down. That's when you break tackles, when you're relying on safeties and cornerbacks and small linebackers to make these like open field tackles on a guy with a full head of steam.
Yeah.
That's when the bad tackling kind of gets into it. And that's exactly what happened. But I mean, this is the worst I've seen this Patriots team tackle all season for sure.
Yeah, I agree. I hope that Spillane foot injury isn't too bad. I hope it's not serious.
He was
serious.
Active, which is a good sign.
Right. But he barely played, if not at all. Right.
He didn't play. I don't think he played at all. But he was in an emergency role. So I hope that means he will play this Sunday against Baltimore.
Hopefully. Cause look, you're going to, if there's a team who can come in with the same formula that the Bills had to beat you, it's going to be this Ravens team, right? 100%. Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson. So it's like, you don't have to do anything crazy. The formula is there. The Bills just showed you how to do it. And the Ravens are a team that's perfectly capable of coming in and executing that same thing.
Yeah, 1,000%. And it's going to be in their building, which is a big factor. And I'm sorry, like on Sunday, this crowd was behind. Even in the second half, as the Patriots were getting trounced, the crowd was generally still in the game. It was loud. It was energetic. It was an advantage. And now you're going to go into Baltimore. So that's one thing that you're going to have to deal with, from an adversity perspective that you didn't have to deal with last week. And I think Baltimore is going to be able to exploit that, because on both sides of the ball, the lack of noise when Baltimore's operating versus noise when the Pats, it's just another thing that the Pats are going to have working against them this week.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I think it's going to be a tough game for the Patriots. I do at the end of the day, think that, hey, once this team gets their full squad back, right, which they should have for the end of the year, which they should have for the playoffs, it's a totally different story. But look, momentum's a real thing in sports. We've seen it. We've seen momentum change games. And, you just won 10 straight. But if you lose 2 straight, now, you got to, I think, stop the bleeding a little bit. Because now you're if they lose either to the Jets or the Dolphins, you've now blown what most likely blown the AFC East, right? You now could drop behind Jacksonville in the standings. Like, you know, the Patriots do have to come out in, I hope, beat the Ravens, but if not, find a way to stop the bleeding and end the season strong for them to get their guys back healthy.
Absolutely. Justin, let's talk a little bit about the coaching of this team. And you hit on it a little bit. I didn't love the play calling in the second half. You know, how much of what happened on Sunday do you put on Vrabel and McDaniels?
I mean, definitely I put it more so on McDaniels than Vrabel, I would, to be completely honest. I just, you know, I watched the Patriots in the first few drives and, you know, they were, you know, they had the trickery going, they were aggressive. The run game was working. They were spreading the ball around and just, it was just like classic Josh McDaniels with the lead in the second half, like conservative, tighten up. Like you just, I just felt like, I just felt like they were really hamstringed, and it was very tough for them to kind of get back to where they were in the first half once their backs were finally up against the wall after Buffalo had completed the comeback. So, you know.
See, I think that's more Vrabel, though, than McDaniels. Like, that was what Vrabel was known for in Tennessee, was that sort of tighten up conservative approach. I mean, honestly, like, if I'm making a blame pie, I thought McDaniels could have done a better job in the second half, but he's probably the one I blame least for what happened Sunday. I blame Vrabel more. I blame Drake May more. I blame this defense probably most of all. I mean, if you're looking at just Sunday in of itself,
yeah,
I think it was mostly about the defense just imploding.
Agreed. I mean, realistically, if you get one stop, even like that stop on third and goal, you probably win that game. That's really all it probably would have taken to hold off. I mean, look, we're talking about the Patriots getting trounced in the second half. We're talking about this and that, but at the end of the day, it was a 4-point game, right? One possession game. So, you know, in the Bills, I believe starting with their last possession of the first half, scored a touchdown on every single drive, right?
They scored a touchdown on four consecutive drives. Five consecutive drives starting in the end of the second quarter.
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
And then they got stopped on the last drive.
The last drive of the game to get the Patriots the ball back.
To get the Patriots the ball back with 2:46 left, and the Patriots did nothing. And then the Bills ran it out the clock and won the game.
Right, exactly. But any of those five drives, pick one. It doesn't really
just
matter.
Just one stop.
Just one stop. I know there was a couple ticky-tack PIs. You know,
we're going to talk about that next. Let's get into that. Yeah. Let's get into the refereeing piece. That's probably the other thing I don't blame that much. And I know that there's probably about three or four bad calls that were – the refereeing was very inconsistent in this game, first of all. Yeah. I don't see how anyone could say that Carlton Davis's critical third down was pass interference. But when Matt Collins gets, like, tackled – you know, on the Drake May interception, that's not pass interference. So that was bad. But at the end of the day, I can't blame the refs for what happened on Sunday. I'm sorry.
No, I can't either. Especially, you know, I'm sure you could see the replay in the stadium. That very first drive of the game, Kayshon Booty dropped that ball, right?
Yeah.
That was a very lucky and rare instance where the replay whatever doesn't pick up on that and review that play. I mean, the Patriots got away with one. That opening drive, they scored off of a missed call and a blown opportunity by the officials. So, you know, if you get a couple ticky-tack penalties, and I guess it all kind of evens out. I still think the Patriots got the shorter end of the stick when you're
well though you bring up the Booty play, and let me ask you, how is, you know, if we're calling pass interference on some of those ticky-tack calls in the second half, Kayshon Booty got mugged on that play, and they didn't throw a flag. So the refereeing was just very inconsistent.
It was very inconsistent. I really hated the Carlton Davis one. To me, that was the biggest one. That's the one
that was terrible.
Yeah. And you know what, especially because, you know, and I believe that was right after the Travion Henderson touchdown too, right? Am I remembering that correctly? Was that right after Travion busted it open to take the lead back?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that was your opportunity to fully have the pendulum of momentum swing back into your corner, right? You were just giving up a couple big drives to the Bills. Travion busts open that touchdown, gives you guys the lead, gives you guys the lead back, and then you have an ability to make a big stop and get the ball back. And the momentum at that point would be back in your court. You have the Bills in the heels now. And that to me was a very deflated. The two plays to me that changed this game was that pass
and the flag came out so late. It came out also frustrating,
extremely late. But the two plays to me that changed the game was that pass interference call in the third and goal from the 14.
And I believe they were right after each other. Like the pass interference call is what gave the Bills a first down on that drive.
Yep.
And then the refs, you know, that holding call, and it was a legitimate holding call on Buffalo. That was holding.
Yeah.
And you know, just to full circle and play the other side of the argument, it's like, yeah, the refs give you the game on a platter or give you a stop on a platter by giving you a 3rd and 15 on a holding penalty, which is a play that probably converts like 3% of the time historically.
Right.
And you can't even stop Josh Allen in that spot. So that's why as bad as the calls were. And I mean, there's a couple more I want to talk about, but I can't, at the end of the day, say that's why the Patriots lost this game when they imploded that bad, especially defensively, but really on both sides of the ball. The other one, Justin, that I do not understand, and it was just a horrible call, and it wouldn't have changed anything, but Marcus Jones intercepted a Josh Allen pass,
yes,
clearly, and somehow they called it, not only pass interference on Jones, which I thought was debatable, but then they said the receiver caught the ball. That made no sense to me.
I didn't understand that one. That was one that left me scratching my head. I mean, it was a 50-50 ball. They went to the ground and Jones came up with it. I didn't understand how you could possibly call that a catch. So I totally.
When did he ever have control of that ball? When did he ever make a ball move, the Buffalo receiver?
He didn't.
You know?
Right.
He didn't.
No. So yeah, that was a very weird one. Even if it was a pass interference, right? Obviously, that would have negated the interception. I believe it would have been still a spot foul. So Buffalo probably still gets the ball, right?
And that's, I think, why Vrabel didn't challenge it ultimately because of the call. I mean, I didn't love that call either. And I know that Jones kind of face guarded a little bit, but he did turn around at the last second. It was a grossly underthrown ball. And to me, if there's one thing that they need to fix in these rules, I am so sick and tired of underthrown balls getting like 30 and 40 yard pass interference. If a ball is underthrown, I really feel like that should not be pass interference. Like if, you know, just like an uncatchable ball is not pass interference. If a ball is like 10 yards, 15 yards underthrown, don't throw the flag because that's really not fair to the defender.
I would agree. I think if you have to come back to the ball, right? Like, what are you supposed? How is the defender supposed to, you know, get out of the way? The defender's running downfield with you. You decide to turn a comeback. You have to turn a comeback to the ball. That's an automatic collision every time. I agree. That to me was a frustrating one. A, because I don't think it was a pass interference, like you said. And B, I mean, I think it should have been clear as day that Jones caught that ball.
110%. But at the end of the day, this was really, all that said, this was about the Patriots and just a total collapse on both sides of the ball. So it was what it was. And the Patriots could have won this game. They would have backed into this win if they had gotten any one of those calls. But this was not about the refs. This was about the Pats. All right, let's end on this before we move to around the league. And that is, I do want to just end on a silver lining a little bit, which is that I think these teams are going to meet again in the postseason. Mm-hmm. And I'm 100% confident that the Pats can beat this Buffalo team, obviously, because they've played twice and both games have been pretty even. Milton Williams comes back. That's going to make a very different game, in my opinion. But there is no way that the Patriots were going to beat this Bills team three times in one season. Exactly. That's really what I think. So we kind of talked about this last week, but look, they got the loss out of the way. It's a shame that Denver won against Green Bay because I think that puts the number one seed as being a lot less likely now.
Right.
But all that said, part of me is almost glad that they just got this out of their system.
Me too. I mean, look, I think this was a good little wake up call. You know, the streak was going to come to an end eventually. I'd rather see it come to an end now than in the playoffs. And, you know, like you said, we talked about this last week. It's very tough to beat any divisional opponent twice in a year, let alone a good divisional opponent, let alone three times in a year. So, you know, that is the, I think the silver lining is the way it's looking right now, the Patriots are on a collision course, you know, with either the Texans or the Bills in the first round, right? And if not the first round, they could very well see themselves against the Bills in the second round. So I agree. If you're going to lose to the Bills, let it be this week.
And yes. And, you know, like, I mean, let's see what happens over these final few weeks too, because Denver still has three really tough games. And I would say that if the Patriots are able to come out and take care of business this week against Baltimore, I kind of feel like it's all okay. I mean, we've all said from the beginning, they needed to win one of these two games. It sucks that they were so close to just kind of wrapping this thing up and putting themselves in a great position. But the reality was, you know, the loss was coming, you know, it was inevitable. It's all good. If they go out and win this week in Baltimore, it's all good. If they go out and lose this week in Baltimore, then I think we have to ramp up the level of concern that we're a team that's backing into the playoffs.
I would agree. And, you know, just this week against Baltimore is huge, not only for the Patriots as an organization in terms of their standing, getting the momentum back, you know, easing the concerns, but look, there's a golden opportunity right now in the AFC. You're not going to have Mahomes. You're not going to have Burrow. And if the Patriots come out and win this game, you're not going to have Lamar either in that Ravens team, which I think the Ravens team, you know, they've been inconsistent. They've been bad at times, but there's enough talent on that roster that any given Sunday, they're capable of coming out in beating a good team. So, you know, it's I think a huge game for the Patriots to go in there on Sunday night and knock them out of the
in a tough spot. And I wish they kept this game in the day, because I just think Baltimore is a tough pace to pay, but I think it's even tougher on a night game. And that sort of whole aura of Sunday night football for a young team and a young quarterback, I don't love that they have to go in there on a Sunday night. But I think the Patriots are a better team than the Ravens. And I think Drake May over the season has been a better quarterback than Lamar Jackson. So I think that's the two things they got going for them. And I think that, you know, the Patriots should go in there and take care of business this weekend. And if they do, I mean, it's all good at that point.
Agreed. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and let's get to around the league. Anything else you want to add about the Pats, my man, before we wrap it up?
No, disappointing, but you know what? Again, like we said, silver linings in still a lot of football left to play. At the end of the day, your team's 11-3. In I don't think anybody foresaw, you know, how good this season was actually going to be. So, you know, I think we got to keep everything in context. You lost a tough game against the Bills in your 11-3, still in a position to win the AFC East, still in a position to potentially get the one seed.
Well, let's use that to segue into around the league, because this is what I want to start with around the league with this week. And that is, look, the Denver Broncos right now are the best team in the AFC.
Yep.
They have the best record in the NFL. I think at Denver, at any level, any round of the playoffs would be the toughest matchup for the Patriots in the playoffs right now. I think that would be the one I would least like them to get. All of that said, I still think the Patriots could go out to Denver and beat that Denver team. I think that, you know, I don't think Denver is far and away above everyone else in the AFC. This is a wide open conference, 100%. And I mean, the Denver Broncos, yes, they're the best team in the conference, but they're no super team. So I think that, you know, as a Patriots fan, you have to say, feel good about the fact that while the Patriots could lose to Houston, if the number seven seed right now, I think they could go in and beat Denver.
I totally agree. Look, we said this, you know, for the last couple of weeks, Denver's a good team. I respect the defense. I respect the coach. You know, we said we respect that home field advantage that they have, but they're not an unbeatable team by any means. I'd still worry about the Bills more than them. I would still worry about a healthy Chiefs team of the past more than them. Like the Broncos will not be a typical one seed in the sense that they're a juggernaut that you're afraid to go in play.
1,000%. Now, all of that said, it is time, Justin, for all of us, all of the national pundits, everyone talking about football, to start to respect Bo Nix for what he is doing.
Yeah.
Because when we talk about Drake May and Drigme not coming up big in the fourth quarter of games. Bo Nix is coming up big at the end of these games. Bo Nix has that comeback DNA. I don't know what it is about him. People don't respect him for whatever reason, but it is time to start respecting Bo Nix and what he's doing in Denver.
I mean, Bo Nix has been a fourth quarter player all season. Arguably, I think statistically, he's been the best fourth quarter quarterback all season. So, you know, obviously you can't come back every game in the fourth quarter, right? But this is a guy who's shown that when it's crunch time, he can come out there, he can deliver, and he can play at a high level. And look, I mean, I think you got to respect Bo Nix, not just because of how he's playing, but because of what he has around him, right? He has weapons. He has an offensive line. He has a Super Bowl pedigree head coach. He has a defense. Like, Bo Nix has everything that he needs to be successful right now. And he's got a 12-2 team that's sitting atop the AFC. I mean, it's very Bo Nix is arguably taking the most criticism for a quarterback who's led their team to 12-2 in a number one seed in a long time.
Yeah, he has. There's no question about it. I think that when, like, even us, when we were just talking about how we don't fear Denver, and it's because still in the back of our heads, and I think this is true for a lot of people, we still don't fear or believe that Bo Nix is really that guy, a la Josh Allen or Pat Mahomes or Lamar Jackson. And on some level, maybe he isn't, but if you look at what he's doing at the end of these games, and this is not just like a 2000 Ravens or 2002 Buccaneers, or, you know, types of where they're just winning with this great defense. Like, what Bo Nix is doing at the end of these games is he is making meaningful big plays to win these games. Look at the Packers. Look at the Chiefs a few weeks ago. The Giants 32-point comeback. The Texans a few weeks ago. The Eagles back in October in Philadelphia. I mean, he's been doing it consistently all year at the end of these games.
Yeah, he has. He's in the Broncos, you know, the Broncos at the end of the day, you got to give them the credit because they've beaten some really good teams, right? You look at what the Broncos have been able to do. They've beaten the Eagles. They've beaten the Packers. They've beaten the Chiefs. They've beaten
the Texans.
Like this Broncos team, you know, is they really are battle tested this year. They've beaten good teams. They've had to have comeback wins. You know, they're in a tough division. This Broncos team is very well equipped to make a deep playoff run.
I agree. I mean, I think again, everything we're saying about the Patriots and how, oh, it's a wide open conference. I mean, you're saying the same thing if you're Denver for sure.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's a wide open conference. And Denver has been the best team for the whole season. So I think it is time for people to start respecting them and respecting what Bo Nix is doing. All right, let's move to the NFC. The team Denver played on Sunday, the Green Bay Packers. The Green Bay Packers suffered a huge loss on the field. Micah Parsons torn ACL, out for the year. And I want to ask you if you think the Green Bay Packers are still a Super Bowl contender. But before I even get your opinion on that, can I just say that there were two major all-in trades for top 20 defenders in this league that happened this year.
Yeah.
And both of them blew up horribly in the face of the team that gave up huge amounts of draft capital, multiple first-round picks to bring in these players. And neither one of them worked out for different reasons.
Yep.
And I just think that that's something we all have to remember when we get frustrated, when teams don't go all in at the trade deadline, all in free agency, when you put all your eggs in one basket, especially in a sport like football, where there's so many injuries, you are one torn ACL away from just getting burned big time. And that's what happened to the Packers on Sunday.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I had my doubts about the Packers going into that game, even with Micah Parsons. I don't think they're a Super Bowl contending team now. I mean, look, I think, first off, I've just never thought Jordan Love is a Super Bowl winning quarterback. I know he's good. I like Matt LaFleur. I know he's got some weapons, but I see him as being a good quarterback, not a great quarterback or one that can go out and win a Super Bowl. Especially, you know, now when that defense takes the hit that they took. So I'm going to say that. No, I think the Packers are a good team, but I don't view them as a true Super Bowl threat right now.
Yeah, I agree 1,000% with that. They're not a Super Bowl threat right now. I think they're a good team, But I think that they're going. I think even with Micah Parsons, I'm not sure if they were a Super Bowl threat. Right. Let's not forget, Parsons got hurt in the fourth quarter of that game. I believe the Packers were losing by 8 points.
Yes.
At that 9 points at that time, so they were going to probably lose that game, no matter what happened to Micah Parsons. So I don't think the Packers are quite there yet. I mean, I think they're a wild card team. They're a good team. They're just not a Super Bowl team.
Yes, agreed. Totally, 100%.
What about the Bears? We've been talking about the NFC North as maybe the best division in football all year. Are the Bears a Super Bowl contender?
No. I think the Bears are, again, because of the quarterback. I like the coach. I like that defense. I like the weapons, everything. You can't tell me that Caleb Williams is going to lead that team to a Super Bowl. I'm just not buying it. I think the Bears are a good team. I think they're capable of maybe making an NFC championship game. But I just don't see a world in which the Bears get to a Super Bowl and win a Super Bowl. Just, you know what? Just because, like, look, I can't picture the Bears beating, a Rams in an NFC championship. I can't picture them, you know, beating some of these other good teams in the NFC. I'm not seeing it for them.
Yeah. So besides the Rams, Justin, who I think we would all agree is the clear cut best team in the NFL.
Yeah.
Who in the NFC is a Super Bowl contender this year? Is there another Super Bowl contender in the NFC besides the Rams?
Well, it's funny. I mean, two of the teams that I like the most after the Rams arguably might not make the playoffs, and that's the Lions and the Buccaneers. So, you know, it's tough. I mean, look, the Eagles are still the Eagles, right? You know, the Eagles, if they figure their crap out, they might be able to turn it around. I mean, they obviously looked pretty good against a struggling Raiders team this past week. I mean, we can't disrespect the defending Super Bowl champs. But, you know, as far as teams that are in the playoffs right now, it's really not many besides the Rams that I would fear or say have the ability to go there.
Well, I'm just going to take those one by one. The Lions got completely outclassed by the Rams this weekend. So I think you can throw, they may sneak in as a wild card, but they're not, I think, on that level. The Buccaneers are in a total free fall. The Eagles are in a total free fall. I take no reassurance about that team from what they did to a pathetic Raiders team and a coach in Pete Carroll that should be fired this offseason. I take no reassurance of that for the Philadelphia Eagles where they are.
Yeah.
They have so much more to prove based on what happened to them in the last 6 weeks. I'll tell you the other team that in the NFC that I think may be a legit Super Bowl contender. I'll give you two. And they both play in the same division. One is the 49ers, who no one's talking about. And I think they're 9-4 now. And the other is the Seattle Seahawks, who I think, again, kind of flying under the radar. But to me, those might be the three best teams in the NFC right now, and they're all in the same division.
I mean, you know, the 49ers, I don't know. I can't see that. I think they've lost too much, right? They've lost a couple big pieces in that defense. I think they're good. I don't know if I see them getting to a Super Bowl. And by the same token, I don't know if I see Sam Darnold leading the Seahawks to a Super Bowl. Like, those are two good teams that I kind of put in the same category as like the Bears and the Packers, like good but not good enough.
The Niners are 10-3, by the way. And the Niners are 10-4, and the Seahawks are 11-3, by the way. So right up there. And the Rams and the Seahawks are playing on Thursday night, by the way, which is going to be like an absolutely epic matchup with the two of them.
It is, but you know, it's another primetime game, another big matchup that Sam Darnold has to play, and I'll load the house up in the Rams for me, to be completely
honest. The game is in Seattle.
Yeah, I'm taking the Rams.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about your boy Joe Burrow this year, Justin, and like what happened to this Cincinnati team and what happened to Joe Burrow, because that was pathetic on Sunday in Baltimore. They just didn't come to play. And how much of this do you put on Burrow? How much do you put on Zach Taylor? And what's ultimately going to be the solution there in Cincinnati?
You know, Joe Burrow, I think, has been in a really tough situation. He struggled to stay healthy, you know, really during most of his career. And when he's been healthy, he hasn't gotten much help from the team around him, right? He's either been playing without a defense, without an offensive line, without both. He doesn't, I don't, we've always said neither of us are big fans of Zach Taylor. I think that Joe Burrow is waste. I know they gave him his weapons, his two best friends, Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins, but he is wasting his career away in Cincinnati. I am now convinced is one of the worst franchises, if not the worst franchise in the NFL. I think Joe Burrow needs to pull a Carson Palmer, and I think he needs to either say, I'm retiring or you trade me. Because
didn't he kind of do that last week after his comments?
It was hinted, you could say, or that's what people are inferring.
I mean, he was kind of laying the foundation, I feel like.
Yeah. He was. I mean, look, he didn't come out and say directly, I don't want to be here. You have to trade me. I'm going to retire. Like, he didn't say those things, but he hinted at it a little indirectly, right? So, you know, I would love to see Joe Burrow go somewhere and get a fresh start, because I think it's going to be more the same for him in Cincinnati. Cincinnati, they won't spend in their defense. They got an awful scouting department. They're a bad organization. They won't put a good offensive line in front of them. Like, he's going to have more of the same in Cincinnati. Injuries in heartbreak, honestly.
There are 31 teams in the NFL that I would be 100% convinced would fire Zach Taylor this offseason as a head coach, because that's what the Cincinnati Bengals need. They need a total gut job. And 31 of the 32 franchises in this league would do that. They would absolutely fire Zach Taylor. His time is up. We're talking about the Bengals, the team that let Marvin Lewis hang on for like 15 years.
Yep.
And that's what gives me pause, because I think that pretty much any other franchise in the NFL would handle this situation a certain way. They'd fire the coach. They'd make the franchise quarterback happy. They'd bring in a whole new regime, and they'd blow it up and rebuild it, because you've got the most important piece. You've got the quarterback. The Bengals are so dysfunctional. I honestly think it's completely unpredictable what that franchise will do. And I wouldn't be surprised if Zach Taylor is back next year as head coach of the Bengals.
I really hope not. You know, I think if you're Burrow, you know, you've proved that you can play, right? You know, you took him to a Super Bowl earlier in your career. I think you hold enough cards now that you either have to force the Bengals' hands to put up, or you got to get out of town, man. Cause like you're never going to win a Super Bowl as is, right? I don't care if they bring in a new regime. That team has an awful offensive line. They have an awful defense. That team is not going to go out and win a championship. And the Bengals have proven that they're not willing to go out there and spend the money needed to shore up that roster. I just think you're delaying the inevitable if you're Joe Burrow. I think while you're still in the prime of your career, you have to force your way out of town.
All right, just to play the other side of that, though, isn't part of the reason that they're so like poorly built as a team because of Joe Burrow's demands? Like, Joe Burrow is the one that wanted them to bring in both Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins. Like, what percentage of NFL franchises in that situation are gonna spend that kind of money on wide receivers and ignore their defense, their line, and everything else?
But I mean, look, I get it. They're spending money.
That was Burrow's doing. That was his wish.
I know. I get it. You're spending money on those three guys, but you know, the Bengals have more. They have more wiggle room in that budget. They're not tapped out. Like, you see some of these teams, you know, taking care of multiple guys on a roster, right? Like, just because you give three guys a deal, it doesn't mean that you don't have any money to go out there and spend. The Bengals are cheap. Let's face it. The Bengals are a cheap organization.
No, you know? Doubt.
So, I mean, I get it. He wanted T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase, but we can't actually say he's wrong for that, because we've seen him healthy. Like, look, the last seven games of the year last year, Joe Burrow arguably had the best seven-game stretch that I've ever seen a quarterback play, right? Like, he was on fire. Like, that offense can click with those three guys. So it's not a matter of that combination not working. It's a matter of they don't have a defense, they have an awful offensive line, and they don't have a good coaching staff. Like, Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, and T. Higgins are not the problem with this team.
They're not the problem, Justin, but look, they put up great numbers, but they didn't win anything. And that's because there is a salary cap. And I know that people say the salary cap is crap, but I think that is only to a point. And when you invest that heavily in skill position players, then you have to, at some point, take that away from elsewhere. And I think the way that team is built, it's like, it's all out of balance. They're so invested in the skill position that they really don't have flexibility or leeway to invest in the line, to invest in the defense. And what happens is they've built the fantasy football team. That's great. Welcome to 7 wins. Welcome to 5,000 passing yards. Welcome to no Super Bowls. That's what they are. So like they have to just completely blow it up and do it. But Burrow was influential. Now you could argue that a part of their dysfunction was trying to capitulate to Burrow because they are just so lucky to have him. Because they know that, you know, like you piss this guy off, he's going to blast his way out of there. So they were kind of in a choice because they're such a crappy organization. So you could argue that's part of it too.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing is if I'm Joe Burrow, you know, that Bengals team let go of some really good defensive guys that they didn't feel like paying anymore. They didn't want to pay them, right? Like, don't forget, Joe Burrow, the year they went to the Super Bowl, That was you know, arguably a very good defense. And they had some guys on there who could play, right? Guys like Jesse Bates and a few others that the Bengals showed an unwillingness to pay. They shipped out a lot of good defenders. So if you're Joe Burrow and you see them, you see that the Bengals are not paying your defense and they're not retaining the defensive players that are making an impact on your roster, I would go out there and I'd say, well, you know what? Then you're signing Ja'Marr Chase and you're signing T. Higgins, because if you're not spending the money elsewhere, what are you just going to save it? You're going to put it back in your pocket. So he saw that they weren't willing to go out and spend in that defense. They're shipping their guys out of town. And he said, well, I'm not just going to let you put the money back in your pocket. You're going to sign my two guys if that's the case. That's what I think is going on there.
It's going to be interesting to see. I'll tell you right now, like I wouldn't be 0% surprised if Joe Burrow was playing quarterback for a different team next year.
Me neither.
And a player like Burrow, he's under contract, but he is someone that has the leeway to blow his way out of town. Like he's one of Absolutely. The few players in the NFL that can do that.
Yeah, he totally can. Retire or trade me. And I think that's kind of the trump card that he holds right now. And the Bengals could get a nice little haul for him. They could.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean,
you know,
imagine him in Minnesota. Imagine him, you know, there's a whole bunch of franchises you could look at and be like, wow, imagine Joe Burrow.
Yeah. Well, Minnesota, the top two for me are Minnesota, right? Because A, they need a quarterback. He reunites with Ja'Marr Chase. Right. I mean, with Justin Jefferson. Or, you know, you tell me this year, if the Rams win the Super Bowl, Matt Stafford's not going to ride off into the sunset potentially. They got the Falcons first round pick. Like the Rams have assets. Yeah. Go out and reload and trade for Joe Burrow. Now you got Joe Burrow and Puka and Sean McVay. Call. Like, you know, there's definitely spots for Joe Burrow where he could go and be successful.
All right. I got two more takes I want to give you before we wrap it up. Number one is we have to talk about the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes' injury. Yeah. And I'm going to say this right now. I'm planting my flag on this, okay? There is not going to be a second chapter for the Chiefs dynasty. It is. We talked about this last week, and that was before the Mahomes injury.
Yep.
The Mahomes injury only further complicates it. Forget about it. I've seen so many memes on Facebook and things on Facebook this week about how Mahomes got hurt in his ninth year, Brady got hurt in his ninth year. I don't think anyone should be under the illusion that Patrick Mahomes is going to have the longevity that Tom Brady had, especially after tearing his ACL.
Yep.
How that's going to affect Mahomes in the unique way that he plays the game, it's going to hurt him way more than that injury hurt Tom Brady. And oh, by the way, Tom Brady is a guy that was like into physical conditioning. It was his mantra. It was his obsession. Mahomes is not that guy. Mahomes is out of shape already. And I don't think he's going to work it as hard as Brady did. I really feel very strongly that now with Mahomes' ACL, in the context of Andy Reid getting old, everything else that franchise is over, just like that, Justin, just like that, it feels like in a matter of weeks.
Yeah.
I really think you can declare the Chiefs dynasty completely dead.
Yeah, I think that's a fairly safe call at this point, right?
There will be no second chapter.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I think, you know, especially with the Mahomes injury now, it's not crazy to question the fact that Travis Kelce probably retires this year, right? Maybe Chris Jones retires this year. You know, they're going to have to undergo a whole new rebuild. And just given the time frame of the injury, I mean, you know, he gets injured in December.
Who's playing quarterback for 2026 for Kansas City? It's probably not him in September.
No, at least the first half of the year, I would imagine.
Yep.
So, you know, this Chiefs team is in for it. And you know what? Look, I think it's just, it honestly just sums up the how the Chiefs' entire season went. I mean, this was a team that, you know, it was just one thing after another. You talk about last season, right? I believe the Chiefs were something like 11-0 or 10-1 in one score games, something crazy, right? This year, the pendulum swung back in the other direction. I believe they're 0-6 in one possession games. You know, they've looked slower. They haven't looked that good. And this was kind of like the cherry on top, you know, Mahomes tearing his ACL. It's a tough go for the Chiefs, but you know what? Look, I think it's just, you know, it's tough. Like we said last week, it's tough to do what the Patriots did. Eventually things don't work out in your favor, and we're seeing it right now.
I think we talked about last week, the Chiefs were in trouble before Mahomes just went and tore his ACL. And now you're throwing another major curveball. It just feels like it's over. And hey, give the Chiefs their flowers. Give them their credit for being one of probably the three or four best dynasties in the history of this league. The Chiefs don't have to do anything else to prove that they are absolutely had one of the most dynastic runs in the history of this sport. They don't have to do anything else. They're already there.
Yeah, I totally, totally agree. Yeah.
Okay, and then this one, I think you're going to like this last take. The Miami Dolphins. I don't know if you watched the game last night.
I honestly didn't. I didn't.
It was a terrible game. It was a total skunk. And it was just typical Miami, you know, win a couple games, make you think they've got an outside chance at the playoffs, then go into a tough stadium and tough weather against a decent team and just completely crap the bed.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people on the national media right now, and they're saying Mike McDaniels has saved his job. Mike McDaniels will be back in 2026. Let me say something. I got no love for the Miami Dolphins, but if I'm advising the Miami Dolphins, do not take the bait on this. No. Get rid of this guy. Get rid of Mike McDaniels. It is never going to happen. Blow it up, Miami. You are a loser franchise with a mediocre quarterback and a head coach that has no idea how to lead a group of men. It is never going to happen. Do not take the cheese on winning a few games against mediocre opponents in the middle of the season and think that you can bring back Mike McDaniels and that's the right move for your franchise. Blow it up.
Yeah, I agree. And just let me say that I'm actually shocked that Mike McDaniel even got the opportunity for the Dolphins to turn this season around. I thought when they were sitting there like 1-5, I thought he was done. I thought he was donezo.
And they looked like he was done.
Yes. And then, they turned around and fired the GM as like a cop out, right? So, you know, I can't believe they let him stay. They went on a nice little run when they had nothing to play for, when the season was already over. And, you know, look, good for them for not giving up on the coach or giving up on the season. But we've been saying this, I think, for a few years now. Mike McDaniel is not a franchise coach. And he's not like, look, and look, I've heard people criticize the Dolphins and, you know, that ownership group, Stephen Ross and whatnot, as saying they're not actually legitimately looking to win Super Bowls or, you know, they're just looking to make money and put a team out in the field. Right. And maybe that's the case. But if you really want to win, if you really want a chance to get back into the playoffs and do something meaningful, it's not going to be with Mike McDaniel, your head coach.
Yeah. As a Patriots fan, you know, please bring Mike McDaniels back.
Yeah.
Please bring Tua back. Keep trying to figure it out. I mean, that is exactly what the Patriots fan should want to see. It's going to continue to hold this Miami franchise where they've been, which is mediocrity.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, look, hey, like you said, no love lost for the Miami Dolphins. I'm cool with them continuing to suck and make bad decisions, but you know, it's just, it's the definition of insanity at this point, right? They're doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. And they're just going to keep getting more of the same if they keep that guy around.
Yep. 100%. Okay. One more quick one, then we'll wrap it up. The New York Giants, Justin, they now hold the number one pick in the draft. I think this is super interesting because do they have a franchise quarterback already in Jackson Dart? People would say yes. Fernando Mendoza looks like he's going to be the number one pick in this draft. I watched him play.
Yeah.
Just won the Heisman last week. And I say that's an NFL quarterback. I mean, look, I like Jackson Dart, but are the Giants going to pass on Fernando Mendoza to stick with Jackson Dart and potentially take a quarterback that might be the kind of quarterback that only comes out once every few years?
I think they are. I think they are. Look, I like Jackson Dart. I think he showed enough that he deserves another chance, right? This isn't like a Josh Rosen, Kyler Murray type situation from a few years ago. Like, I think Jackson Dart deserves the chance to be the starting quarterback. And we've said that this Giants team has a lot of foundational pieces there to build off of, right? This is going to be a fantastic opportunity for the Giants, as long as they don't blow this.
Yeah, they can't mail this up.
Right.
Don't mail this up.
Exactly. If they don't mayo this, then they're going to probably get a nice haul for that first round pick. And they're going to be sitting pretty because they're going to wind up with two, maybe three first round picks out of this. You know, if they trade back into the top five or top 10 and go get themselves a lineman or whoever, I don't know, but they don't, you know, if they pass on this, it's going to be a payday for them.
I mean, I'm looking at their schedule right now and like they host the Giants, they go to the Raiders and they host the Cowboys. I see all three of those as games the Giants could well win. You know, which could really screw up their plan. But,
yeah.
But you know, I'm not a big believer in tanking, but I would give two exceptions to that rule. One is if you don't have the quarterback, then you need to lose so you can get draft capital to get the quarterback. And that's what we just saw happen with the Patriots. And that's why I was rooting against them for the first time in my life in 2023. And then the second exception to that rule is if you have the chance to get the number one pick, even if you have the quarterback already, you know, if especially in a year where there's a good top-rated quarterback coming out, you can trade that for a haul, and that can really set up your franchise. I think those are the two exceptions to the rule of I don't root for tanking,
right,
as a fan. But I think the Giants, you know, if you're a Giants fan, you should be rooting for your team to lose these last three games, get that number one pick, and set that team up. Because that team is set up for, I think, a run if they do get that number one pick.
Yeah, big time. Honestly, you know what? I'm kind of rooting for it because I think it would make things that much more interesting. I mean, you know, you look at some of the teams that are vying potentially for that top pick. The Giants are by far the team that's in the best spot to turn themselves around as an organization next season in 2026. So I think it would be very interesting to see what the Giants can get for that pick and what they do with the trade back.
Yeah, if the Giants play their cards right this offseason, they should be the Patriots of next year.
Yes. Yes, they should.
Any other things, Justin, you want to bring up before we wrap up this episode of the Ultimate Patriots podcast?
That about does it.
All right, man. Well, want to thank everyone that listened to this episode. Have a great, great holiday week. Be healthy, be well, be safe. Enjoy the football. Enjoy the college football playoffs this weekend. That'll be great to watch. Watch Oregon trouncing James Madison by 50 points.
Yeah.
Enjoy it all. Holiday parties. Stay healthy. Stay well. Stay safe. Drive sober. Don't drink and drive. Very simple. That's the doctorly advice for everyone. And we'll catch you next week with another episode of the podcast. Be good, everyone.